anything is how you will do everything. And the lessons you learn in jiu-jitsu on the mat teach you to be a better human being off the mat. Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset.
Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset. We're glad that you decided to listen again. My name is Pete Dealey, and I'm here with my professor, Professor Lucas Hubo.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little jittery. I had a little too much submission coffee this week. So if I talk a little fast, I think I might have overdid it. So, you know, that's... However, in the right dosage, submission coffee not only is delicious, but we think could improve your submission percentages. So some of you have asked about our coffee. It's called Submission Coffee, and we sell it through our website, A Well-Run Life Gear. And you can get it, and we'll ship it anywhere around the country. So that's our little plug that we do every week, that if you would like to support us, that's the way you'd like to support us. Did you have yours today?
Oh, yeah, multiple times.
All right, well, we may get through this in 30 minutes rather than 60 minutes since you and I are so caffeinated. Well, Professor, last week we talked about kids and we talked about children and why jiu-jitsu was a good use of time and energy for parents to connect their kids to jiu-jitsu. But we also talked about parents and how they could enhance the experience of the kid or detract from the experience, not just of their child, but the children in the environment. And so I know it goes without saying that it's an individual sport on competition day, right? That like, when you go on the mat to compete, it's you against your opponent. And I understand that. But you can't get there without a training, partner. Yes. Usually you need a bunch of training partners. Yes. You need somebody to teach you. You need, you know, belts that are both higher, and there's probably advantages to rolling with mm-hmm. newer people. So you need this community of people. And so for me, even though competition day is an individual sport, I feel like jiu-jitsu is a team sport. So yes. My first question is to you, how do you feel about that? Like, do you feel like when you think of it, do you think of it more as a team sport or more of an individual sport? Like, how do you think about
it? I think jiu-jitsu is the most individual team sport ever.
Okay,
if
well
that
said.
Makes any sense.
Yeah, talk about that.
Exactly like you're saying, Pete. When you were competing, you were the one that is fighting. Mm-hmm. But you were just fighting because you had everyone else behind you.
Yeah.
And one thing that I like a lot to talk about every time that you're competing by yourself, like you're not competing, you're not fighting because you hate that person in front of right. you, but you were competing because you love everyone behind you. Mm-hmm. You know, when you were competing, you were representing all your teammates, your team, your training partners, and all the hard work that they did to make you be there competing. Right?
Yeah.
So In other words, I don't know how to explain this better, but yes, it is a individual sport in the moment that you are competing by yourself over there, but you have all your team behind you and your team and multiple different training partners, your professor and facility and everyone else, they're going to make you ready for that. And a good team or a bad team can completely change your perspective and your experience in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, I mean, to that end, to that point, like that's one of the jiu-jitsu team, my teammates are one of the great blessings of my life in a sense that,
yes.
you know,
yes.
because my experience coming into it, the support and really affection that I feel like from my teammates to be patient with me and to help teach me, you know, has been so motivating to first of all, be a good student, like to listen mm-hmm. to them and to absorb what they're saying. And then it creates a positive pressure for me to want to improve
yes,
because I want to show up and be a good training partner back to them and do that. So given your length of your career, I mean, you probably have experiences with people who were good teammates and bad teammates. And I'm curious, when you think back over your time, was there a period of time where you felt really connected to a good team, like you were in a good group? I mean, we'll leave today out of it. Like, I just mean prior to the community that you've built, perhaps earlier in your career. Do you have examples of times when you felt like, boy, this is a good group of people and
you
might
be better? So first, like you're saying, why do we have today at our school is something that's what jiu-jitsu brings, but at the same time for us, I think something rare to happen because it's such an amazing community environment that literally my best friends are my students, right? You become like a relationship between professor students, and then after it become like teammates, and after it become brothers, you know? And that's what we have now. But I also had a great teammates, and I have so many great memories, especially my early days in jiu-jitsu, because I have what I'm saying about my early days, because I was look up to many people, right? Like, everyone was better than me. When you start, everyone is better than you.
Right.
And professors and now masters, you know, I was lucky enough to see them on their prime as a competitors, right? I had a so fortunate to be present to jiu-jitsu in a great team. That is Grace Barra there in Campinas. The head instructor still there, now master Liberty. And Liberty, he was already well-known in jiu-jitsu on our region by the competition. Had like so many really good athletes. And some of them were already black belts. But other than there were brown belts back then. They were pretty much my first coaches.
Okay.
And I will say, like, Professor Canella and Professor Farol, those two, they're unbelievable. Like, it's really nice to see when I start as a white belt, they were brown belts, and a couple months later, they got to their black belts. And on that time, I would say they were probably around 20 or 21 years old,
okay,
no more than that. And now they're like 4th or 5th degree black belts.
Wow.
You know, they both play such an incredibly important role for Grace Barra in Brazil. But anyway, I had those guys who, you know, as examples for me every day. And then a little bit after that, I had Professor Kiko, that is an amazing athlete, amazing human being. He knows so much about jiu-jitsu, about physical activities, and is such a great example on what a man supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right. Like, not just on, but like off the mat as well.
Right.
So all those great professors and teammates, they build me to, you know, they help to build me on what I am today. You know, I have the influence of my parents, of my friends, of my family, and a lot of influence from all of them as well.
Yeah. When in a previous episode, we talked a little bit about you getting your black belt. And one of the things that you said that I took with me was that when you got your black belt, although you felt, okay, like, I've worked hard to achieve this, it also was something that I'm not just taking on the responsibility of teaching techniques, but I'm taking on the responsibility of being the black belt in the community, right? Of having to take on the responsibility that people will look to you differently than they would otherwise, which I think is a special thing about having a black belt, that people assume, or not assume, but they look to you and they think you're a different type of person. It's not just that you can do different things. When you think about what those early coaches and professors gave to you beyond a knowledge of technique, can you describe what you think they conveyed to you in terms of values? Like, I think it's useful to hear the idea that they helped you form your ideas about what does it mean to be a man. Like, that, I think we need models of people we want to be like, because it helps us make our choices, you know, who do we want to emulate? So how would you describe what those people gave to you? Like, what would be how would you
describe? I think the best, they gave me a lot of examples, like, and not necessarily about what they were telling me.
Yes.
But the most of the lessons was about what they were doing.
Yeah.
And I always was like that. I always liked to observe people, you know, and see their reactions. And you know, and you sometimes you have people that it just kind of like attracts you in a way, you know,
Sure.
like,
Yeah.
man, like look at that person, you know, like he seems to be a great person, like because of this, whatever you create on your head. And then you start to pay attention more to the person, then you start to see and understand the values of the person.
Yeah.
And that can be something that you value as well or not, right? And then you just change for maybe a different role model or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And all those coaches and professors, they were like every day showing me how to do things, you know?
Yeah.
Some of them, for example, I had a Professor Canella was the one that was, Canella means shin in Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's a, not getting away from our conversation, but it's a funny nickname that he had because when he started jiu-jitsu with Professor Liberty as well, now Master Liberty,
right.
He was a young kid and like kind of like overconfident.
Okay.
And that he did karate when he was younger.
Right, yeah.
And like, I can kick everyone. I don't feel anything. And then Master Liberty like, oh yeah, he kicked me. And then he kicked, oh. And then Liberty went there and like, pull the poor kid on their knees, on mm-hmm. his knees.
Yeah.
And then, oh yeah, you're Canela, change anyway.
Yeah.
But that's how things were, right?
Right.
But Canela was always really good with kids.
Okay.
Really good, like yeah. Super patience and using the right language and making fun, making interesting, you know, like playing
yeah.
a little bit while you were learning at the same time.
Right.
And one of the most beautiful jiu-jitsu that I ever seen, like so flexible and plastic on his movements. So he
yeah.
was the one that was like, man, I want to fight like him.
Yeah.
You know? And super nice guy and this and that. On the other hand, we had Farol. Farol was the other professor, like great jiu-jitsu, like
mm-hmm.
amazing jiu-jitsu.
Right.
But he wasn't so friendly like
yes.
Canela.
Right.
But he wasn't mean at all. He was just like
yeah,
straightforward. He's gonna talk to you.
Right.
He's gonna set up the expectations. And if you meet the expectations, the reaction will be one. And if you don't, you're gonna be the other one.
Right.
So looking back and try to analyze those two, you kind of like have a good balance, right?
Yeah,
on like
yeah, right.
Being playful and like understand the needs for that person and being more flexible and at
right.
the same time. Not being rigid, not being mean or anything, but be firm on talking with the person and set expectation. Look, the thing's gonna work on that way because of this, this, and that. Are you good? Okay. If not, let's talk, and I'm gonna show you the way. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we had a
yeah.
like Professor Kiko. That is also he's a good mix of both, but Kiko, I trained with him under him until my purple belt. And he's the one that I never score a point or advantage on him in his sparring. You know, he was the one that always like, whatever you do you with him is because you earn it. Because man, I was like, I won't get nothing.
Yeah.
Like every train he was mashing me, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just funny.
Yeah. That, I mean, if those people didn't treat you well in the beginning, you would not have continued is my guess, right? I mean, they
yeah.
kind of gave you the experience, like, and they could have
uh-huh.
given you, they gave you a great experience. And if they had not given you a good experience, then they would have deprived you of,
yeah,
you know, all the pleasure jiu-jitsu has given you. Your turns out to, you know, now it's your profession.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big responsibility. So
I have a, sorry to
not
cut
at
you
all.
Again. I have
no.
a funny story. Like
yeah.
when, on white belt, I started to compete first tournament. I lost. We already talked about that. It was like
right.
almost like a traumatic situation,
right.
experience. But at the same time, like I want to do this more. And then after that, I started to have some good results. And then I won my state championship, and I was getting to my to close to the blue belt. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I spent a couple of years in a white belt, even though I trained a lot, but you know, I spent a couple of years there. And then Professor Liberty, right, the head professor. He called me to join the competition class.
Mm-hmm.
And the competition class, it was all those professors that was telling. They were there training together, plus other professors. It was like just warriors there. It was
right.
always well known to be like really tough training. But this training was about noon. And at noon, I was at the school, right? I was on my first year of high school. But because here I was invited, I was feeling so good about it. I talked to my parents, like, let me, like, I go to school, but can I leave early? And then I can be there in time for training. Master Liberty call me. So right. I really want to be there. It's like, yeah, no, that's okay. You know, this time, one time, that's fine. I went there, you know, I was about 10 minutes late for the training. Just because, like, sure. I couldn't leave early. And it was about, like, a 15 minutes walk.
Right.
Which I ran. So I did it in about, like, 10. But, like, change everything. You know, boom, I did my best 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I was going upstairs. So we have a door. And then you open the door, you go upstairs. On the moment that I open the door, I start to already hear someone yelling with me. I didn't know what it was. So I went all the way upstairs. Liberty was yelling, like, so, what are you doing here? You're late. No one can wait on my training. Get out of here. I was so sad, Peter. Like,
oh, I'm sure.
Oh, my God. Like, I thought you like me. Like, yeah, you just invited me yesterday, you know. I was doing good on the tournament, and they invited me, and that's how you're going to treat me?
Right.
I was first... was a mix of feelings, like, on being sad, being offended, and being scared.
Yeah, yeah. right. Yeah.
And after, like, I think it took me another 3 days to see him again. And I was like, and then I was mad. After that, I was just mad, right?
Yeah, right.
But then he came to me, he talked, and, like, it was his way to show me that you need to run the spot. It's a commitment, you know, you commit a mistake. Make sure the mistake won't happen again. Learn from that and move on. You know, that was his way to teach me that. But I will never forget, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when someone decides to, you know, that's an attack of sorts, right? So, I mean, and sometimes those, the tough talk has its place. And sometimes I think, you know, we think it has its place and it's misguided. But I mean, because you're, that obviously stayed with you. He has a very vivid, vivid memory.
I was 15, maybe 14, 15 years old. And now I'm 32. I can see that scene is still in my head. So it stayed with me.
Yeah. I mean, the notion of feeling a part of something that is bigger than yourself, I think, is one of the real pleasures of being on a team. Because now it's no longer just about, you know, what's going on with you, but what's going on with us, you know, you become a part of an us rather than just an individual. Uh-huh. And, you know, we talked about the Gracie family and how, mm-hmm. you know, as they introduced their children into jiu-jitsu, it was through play and, you know, sort of a gentle approach and making sure it was fun. But it was a way to bring the kids into, like, well, you're a part of this world now, but it was a gentle sort of introduction. And then it kind of got its steam as it goes along. I was looking on the 22nd of September, this is 2022, in case you're listening to this in the future, that day will be the second anniversary of my time with you. So I've been studying in your gym for soon to be 2 years.
Nice.
Yeah. And the humbling part of the most humbling part of the experience has been the patience and openness of you and my teammates with me to meet, like, you talk about being a good professor is teaching what the student knows, not teaching what you know, but teaching what the student needs to know, excuse me, like finding out, like, what does that person need to learn? And I've been a slow learner at this. Like, this has been a tough road of trying to figure out how to do stuff, but you and all of my teammates have made it such a pleasure to not be embarrassed about, like, okay, I can't do this. It's taken me 1,000 times to learn it, and so on and so forth. And not that I feel an expert in anything, but I feel like I'm a part of a group, and feeling part of that group makes it really fun to keep a consistent training schedule. I train as much as my schedule will allow. I compete not just because I want to, you know, have the experience of competition, but I love showing up on game day, so to speak, and feeling with all of that. And the culture that you set in our gym, I think, encourages people to be encouraging to each other, you know? And so I'm the recipient of all of this amazing generosity of you and the teammates to help me become a good beginner. But I know it can go the other way also. So mm-hmm. can do you have an example in your days of training elsewhere that somebody wasn't a good teammate? And what did that look like? And what was the consequences of their behavior?
Yeah, I think not being a good teammate, you translate most part of the times on someone that doesn't know how to understand how to row, for example.
Right.
Right. Like, let's suppose you were rowing with someone maybe bigger than you, stronger than you, and maybe even better than you, like more skills, right, on that level.
Right.
What jiu-jitsu teaches is to balance and try to match the intensity and the skill levels for both of you guys enjoy the training, right? Yeah. It's because I know more, it doesn't mean that I need to show more to you why we were rolling,
right?
Like submitting 1,000 times is not benefit for me, not even less for you,
right?
It's like matching the intensity, matching the skill levels and things like that. And most part of the times, I think the not being a good teammate, it can be translated to that. Like mm-hmm. to someone that it can be really rough on sparring, or like you sometimes kind of like legal movements, you know, things like that it becomes like the training, not pleasure anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And you do have space for that. Okay. Sometimes during in a specific training session, but most of the times, no, people don't appreciate that. And on my opinion, this is only an ego check for that person who is doing all of this to you, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when we talked about parents and kids, we talked about like the way a parent can hurt the experience of the kid mm-hmm. is to make it more about the parent than about the kid.
Yeah. And, or even bully that person, you know, like, they're going to choke you 10 times today, you know?
Right. Right. And yeah. I feel like the culture of our gym, people, you know, are aware of that. Everybody has a role of being a teacher and a student throughout the day, right? There's a time mm-hmm. when you might know something that somebody else does, and we're pretty, pretty generous. On the bully thing, it's funny that you mention it, because I think from a humor perspective, it's such a tricky thing to watch after, like teasing that can have a really detrimental effect between you and your teammates, and mm-hmm. teasing that is really humorous. And I don't think it's always easy to know, like mm-hmm. when you've crossed the line. And I've made a choice in terms of teasing in general, like in my life, to kind of leave it mostly alone. And the reason for that is like, I think about the commitment of time for jiu-jitsu. So you come in, it's, you know, in the adult class, this may be like your 90 minutes a day where you really like, hey, this is my 90 minutes. And I'm, you know, and so if you come and you say something to that person, and in that 90 minutes and they leave the class and they're thinking about that remark you made, you kind of wreck that guy's day or that lady's day.
Yeah, it is different if you mean you are making a joke and like, and you come to me, professor, I'm going to submit you right now, you know. It's a different situation when against like someone that does that all the time against everyone, or even against a only specific individual, but that individual becomes a target.
Right. Yeah.
And that is a bullying, you know. And what usually happens in jiu-jitsu is like, more you train, if that bully on that case is sticks with jiu-jitsu, they will stop to do that. Because when you get to a blue belt after a couple of years training, purple, brown belt, you won't have these actions anymore.
Right.
Or you're not, at least you're not supposed to. Well, you should know better when you get to a purple belt, for example, that this is not the way, this is not cool. You know, that's not the way how we do. This is not like how jiu-jitsu is.
Right.
And unfortunately, we do have some bad explanations in jiu-jitsu right now. Great athletes, pretty talented, but horrible examples of what a martial artist is, in my opinion.
Right.
And this can be deflect how the next generation will be, you know, in a couple of years, unfortunately, but let's see.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I think about parents and kids, and I think about like, teammates and our relationship, everybody's relationship to everybody else, like every interaction that you have with a person is a training session for the next interaction that you're going to have with them. And so as a parent, like for me, I know that if something's bugging me about work or whatever, and then I'm sharp with my child, that the next time that my kid comes up to me, they're going to think about the time that I was sharp with them, which might have had nothing to do with them. But the consequence of me having made that remark now gets played out, because they're like, oh, Jesus, the old man is cranky. And, you know, he's probably going to be cranky the next time I come up to him.
Yeah.
And I think kids and parents, like, you live with that reality all the time. And so, because children are so quickly affected by a parent. But I think of that as a training partner too. Like when someone comes in, when they're done, if whatever interaction they have with me, both talking and training, my hope is that they come away from that wanting to come back to train more, you know, that it's positive in a way that's uplifting. And by and large, I mean, I find that with our group. I think, you know, everybody in there is better than me. So I'm grateful for the fact that they're patient with me to do that. And I've tried to return that favor to the people that come in on their first day, like, don't get discouraged. Yeah. And, I don't know. And because for me, all of those small interactions either strengthen the team and make us like all want to like work harder and be together and have that experience, or you lose people quickly because there's only so many times you're going to come in and get before you decide, you know, I don't want to do
that. And talking again about like being a bad training partner, being a bad teammate, it can be reflected by someone really rough when he's sparring,
right?
Or doing like illegal movements sometimes, you know. Yeah. But that's why will happen in a street fight, or can be by someone, you know, when they're in a bad position, they kind of like start to coach.
Instead,
like try to fight, like, keep pushing. I tap, you know, just that's an ego thing. Can it be by maybe not watching their geese, you know? Can be by, you know, hygienic stuff.
Yeah, that's
it. Can be by a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny about the geese.
Being a team, you guys, like, everyone will work together. And again, a lot of the times, things are not being done with the mean the bad things, right? It's just like learning. They're learning. It's a learning process like everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned about the geese. I mean, I think the formality of, like, you know, when you say, okay, fix your geese and line up, like, there's an expectation that we respect each other and behave in a certain way. And there are rules to this environment. Like, this is not it matters if you line up and your geese all out of whack, because that's disrespectful to the community from the standpoint of that's not our standard. And, you know, that idea, I think, is important, because too many places, I think, there have no standards, right? Like, you can, the idea that anything goes. And when you don't have something to aspire to, a way to behave, it doesn't call you to your better self as part of, like, what, you know, I think about my experiences on teams.
I like that.
Yeah. Like when I think about instruction, I think about being 5 or 6 and my uncles teaching me gymnastics, and they'd be like, I bet you can't stand on your hands, you know? And then all of a sudden they have me in a handstand.
Uh-huh.
It's not like, okay, line your elbows up with your shoulders, get your hands on, you know, they're not teaching me gymnastics, but they're teaching me to do things that they can do. And now I'm like a part of their group. And then I think about like teams that I've been on that we were successful, everybody doing their part, and happy to do their part, and then excited for you when you do your part. You know, there was the Buddhists call this like sympathetic joy. Like, they're happy for you. They're happy for themselves, but they're happy for you too. I think those are things that not everybody has that in their life. You know, they're like, they go through and they have a job, and the job is just, they're getting paid, but there's not like a community. And everybody's home life, some people have wonderful home lives, but not everybody does. You know, a jiu-jitsu community, I think, offers a chance to be a part of a family type environment, more so than many other things, because you have to have such a high level of trust. You know, I roll with you. If you want to snap all my bones, you're going to do that. You know, so I have to trust you that we can have this experience and I'm safe while still having a chance to kind of do my, you know, and that has to happen between all of us.
What I love also about, again, jiu-jitsu being the most individual team sports ever, is because exactly what you're saying, the joy on seeing your teammates being successful, and you know you had your contribution to for that happen.
Right.
And you know, like, that's how the culture is set, right? And it's like I saw once when the baby starts to, you know, start to walk, you know, it's crowding and then walk. Everyone around is like, clappers, let's go. So what you were doing is like, you were just giving encouragement for the baby to keep doing that. Right. And like teaching the baby that, look, you'll be hard. You're going to fall a couple of times, but we are here with you. We're going to give all the support.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes for other things, people don't do that.
Right.
Like, you're going to, if you have an idea, you're going to start straight. Oh, man, you're going to go, you're old. Like, you know, instead give you all the courage and, you know, the positive things, start to take this away from you. Whatever you have, they start to take away from you, right? Yep. And the jiu-jitsu team, we don't see that.
Right. There was this wonderful video of our of two of our children in our community right now, jiu-jitsu, and they're friends, but they went to go compete against each other in the tournament, and there was anxiety.
They did the finals together.
So this is for the gold medal, and they got these two little girls. I don't know how old are they? Seven, six?
Seven or eight.
And so in this video, these two buddies, these two young girls, and they, you know, and they don't want to hurt each other's friendship, right? They want to remain friends. But then they go and they have their fight. And at the end of the fight, there's this wonderful video of them hugging each other. And like, one little girl picks up the other one, and then she puts her down. And then the one who was picked up grabs the other girl and picks her up. And I thought to myself, how special is this to, like, hey, I'm training to win. I'm not training to lose. Like, even at seven, I go hard. Like, I do the best I can. And now you beat me and I'm happy for you. You know, like, that is a special thing to observe and to be a part of. Like, even though you beat me, I'm excited for you. I wanted to win. I didn't win. But that doesn't mean, A, we're not friends. And two, I'm not excited that you got your victory.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't happen.
Even like, if you sometimes soccer, right? Like, soccer is a big thing, sports, or basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, at the same time, there's a team sport. You guys, you have your own responsibility on the team and the game. Right. You also gonna have that fight for a position, right?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That sometimes can translate to a bad experience. Like, maybe your best friend or something.
Yeah.
Is fighting for the same spot that you want.
Sure.
And this can be traumatic. And you just know, like, you guys have just, you were training together. You were not competing for a spot.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Like, there's not a starting and backup team. You know, it's like, we're all trained, and then we all are our stars of the moment, whether we win or lose. I think about this in my business life. And like, what does it mean to, like, how does this idea translate to my business life? And as I thought about this podcast ahead of time, I have a really like memory that it was important to me as in my development as a business person. So I'm in my early 30s and I'm beginning to have a lot of responsibility, and I am a lot more responsibility than my age group. So I'm always the youngest guy in the room. And I'm in a room full of business leaders in a Fortune 500 company. I was probably your age. I was probably 32. And I'm in with the CEO of this company. and the president of this company and a handful of other leaders leading this. And I have a big role. So company does mm-hmm. like $36 billion a year worth of business. I have like five, I'm responsible for 5 billion of the 36 billion. So I'm the youngest guy in the room, but I'm like,
how much of that went in your pocket?
So 4.5 billion went into my pocket. I wish. So it was, my point being is that I felt like for the first time in my professional life, like I was on the starting team, right? Like I'm in, it's a big company. I got a big kid's role in it. And I'm listening to the leader of our team. Now, this guy had an interesting relationship to the company. He was leader of the company. Then he got thrown out. The board of directors threw him out. And then he put together an activist group of investors. And then he gets reinstated. And so he's back. So he's had this fascinating life leading these very big things. He has a lot of power, right? So anyway, this is a long preamble into trying to just tell you what he says to us. So we're at the table and he said, look, I always wanted to be in this job. Like I wanted to be the leader of this thing. And I had all these plans, you know, I was like, when I get that job, I'm going to do all these things. He's like, so when I lost my job and I came back, I got a chance to do all my ideas. And he says, you know what? It took me like 30 days, you know? And then it was like back into the ordinary rhythm of this. He says, so let me tell you what's important about being the leader. He says, it's not about like your ideas and like your ability to shape this. It's about standing up for the people around you. And he's like, that's what's important about this job. He says, and if you want my job and you want to ascend to the company, that's what I want from you guys. Like, I want you to be connected to the people around you and you stand up for them and you help them develop into better leaders than that. So your job is not to hire people who are not as smart as you and as quality. You have to go find the best, most talented people. And then, so when I think about like that statement,
that's awesome.
Right?
That's awesome. Yeah.
This guy, he was a billionaire at the time. He's a billionaire now. He was the highest paid executive in DC at the time that we were having this conversation. And his message to me as a young leader was like, it's actually not about you. It's about the person next to you and how do you show up for them? So when I'm, you know, had the couple of my competitions, and I look at you and Coach Andrew is there telling me what to do. And you're telling me what, you know, coaching me and all the rest of it. I think about that business environment, like that his message to me was help people get better than they were. And now here I am receiving this instruction, this support. Mm-hmm. And that to me is a special thing. So I think, the reason why I go down this road is that when we build this beautiful community that you've built with us at the gym is not just about what goes on inside the gym. All of the good stuff that goes on there then radiates out into the community. And that makes our community stronger and better because inside those walls, you're teaching people, hey, stand up for the person next to you, you know, be a good training partner.
Yeah, that's awesome, Peter. I love what you're saying, and I'm true believer on that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just glad that you just can help us on that journey, right? On that self-improvement and give us like good tools to keep applying this on every day.
Yeah. And that, you know, the way you're so good with the kids, we have these other students that are adult students that I see you bring into the mix of teaching them. And so all of the things that are happening with the adults then trickle down to the kids and the kids see other adults treating each other properly and supporting each other. And so their model of like, well, when you grow up, what do? Well, you help people and you help them be better, you know, not you try and beat them, you know, you go hard, but you don't, the goal here is to either, you know, win or learn, not win or lose, right? So
because high quality of people that you have around you is better for you, right?
Yeah.
You're like, what does that say? You were the average on the five or six people that you walk, you know?
Yeah.
So you wanna walk with the best people.
And the Buddhists say this, they say, look, you water, you know, what seeds in the person next to you do you want to water? You know, do you want to water the seeds of like anger and, you know, jealousy? Not, or do you mm-hmm. want to water the seeds of, you know, excellence, of discipline, of compassion, of mm-hmm. patience, you know? And so every interaction between two people is a training session for the next one. And so if we're careful with each other, then we, you know, we use that expression sometimes, right? Iron sharpens iron.
Yes.
Like, okay. So if you develop your character and you bring that best character to the community, to the team, that team gets stronger, the community gets stronger.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Well, listen, I am so grateful for what, you know, how you lead us there. And for all of my teammates who might be listening, I can't tell you how important you guys are to me. And to those of you in the art community that are attending to the kids, I'm so grateful because I want the children that are growing up now to lead us in the future in a way that, you know, makes us a better society. It's a confusing time to be a kid as it is to be an adult. And so any place that you're safe and you know you're loved is important to me that, you know, that exists out there in the world. So Professor, like as it relates to, you know, teammates, we've talked a little bit about like the relate, what does it mean to be in a team? Sometimes you can poison the environment and, you know, hopefully you're spending time making it stronger. What else should we say before we conclude things today?
I think keeping that the mindset that you were talking now, Pete, like what kind of person that you want to be for the group, right? Always think about the one next to you and not only about you, right?
Right.
Being selfish is something that it can come like in a super wrong way, especially like if you think that jiu-jitsu is only an individual sport, because again, when you are competing, you are the only one fighting on that mat against another person.
Right.
But if you don't have a good team behind you every day, you won't be able to do that.
Right.
So be the positive guy, be the helper, be the tough training partner sometimes when you need it.
Right.
And just add in a positive way for your training partner experience.
Right.
That's how both of you guys are gonna grow together, gonna enjoy the training together. It's not everyone that wanna be a competitor.
Right.
So that's the moment of the day of your training partner that you can make. They're probably trying to make the best of their days on that hour, on that session.
Yeah.
You know, all the problems are behind when you put your gi. So you make it the best, you know, just try to be the most positive influence for your training partner.
Yeah, that's perfectly said. That's perfectly said. So, you know, the professor and I talk about this idea that jiu-jitsu is for everybody. So when you go in and you find your local jiu-jitsu school, observe these things. Observe what language are they using? How are they approaching each other? I think it's useful even if you're going to be in the adult class. How do they instruct the children? What's the values of the place? And what I would offer to you, to those of you who are still considering whether or not you want to try jiu-jitsu or not, that it's a unique opportunity, that there are not many places in life that can offer you the type of community that can be developed around this experience of jiu-jitsu. So if you're near us, we hope that you come in and visit us. But wherever you may be, we hope that you find a good jiu-jitsu school and start your journey. And if you're somebody that's on their road, we don't want you to give up. So too often we lose people in the first year. We want you to hang in because we know the better you feel, or the more comfortable you feel in the movements, it changes your relationship to your training partners, and then sometimes you get to be the teacher, and that always feels good, you know, when you can be helpful. So don't give up. We want you to stay at it because we know there's good things for you if you don't give up. All right, Professor, thank you very much.